Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. In this edition of Radio Curious, we visit with my old friend, Congressman Sam Farr, who represents Monterey and Santa Cruz County in the United States House of Representatives. We visited on the afternoon of January 20th, 2009. And in this visit, we discuss what it was like for him to be present at the inauguration of Barack Obama and the upcoming legislative efforts in the current Congress of the United States. Congressman Sam Farr, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry. It's great to be back on your program.
On Inauguration Day 2009, tell us where you were and what you saw.
Well, as a member of Congress, we sit around the president. You have the members of the Senate, the House, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Supreme Court, and the cabinet members, the new cabinet members. So I was right at the bottom of the stairs where people come in. All the dignitaries walked down the stairs, and I was taking pictures because that's what I like to do. And so I just stood at the bottom of the stairs and got to talk to everybody as I took their picture.
So tell us about the feeling in Washington, D.C.
Oh, this town is just explosive. I've never seen anything like it. Nobody's ever experienced it in any such way. It's bigger than any Academy Awards, Super Bowls, rock stars, inaugurals of anything. It's essentially coming together of people, and you just feel it the whole entire weekend. It is. I've never experienced anything like it, Barry. I've never seen people such mobs that were so friendly and so polite.
Last night you were saying, when we were chatting briefly, that it's like Woodstock in Washington, D.C. It's a real happening.
It's greater than the Woodstock feeling. But that all that kindness is certainly there. Whether it was the rock concert on Sunday or today, the crowds, you've been to my apartment, which is only a block away, the streets are just wall-to-wall people as far as the eye can see. And it's been several hours since the inaugural, and yet there are lines almost a mile long just trying to get into the subway, the metro station. And people are being very polite. What was amazing is we gave out, each member of Congress got 199 tickets to hand out to people, 20 of which could be seating tickets. And we had a lot of our constituents who got those tickets who couldn't even get into the gates to get them to their seats. I mean, they were pretty discouraged because they spent a lot of money and came here and hotel reservations and did all the things that they were supposed to do at the time they were supposed to do it. But nobody could estimate the size of the crowds, and they just couldn't get on subway trains because they'd come into the station entirely blocked, packed. They get off the train, couldn't get out of the stations because the exits were just packed. Get on the street, and it was just a slow line to get to anywhere.
And everybody was in good humor.
And everybody, even though they were tiredly disappointed that they didn't get to sit where they were expecting to sit or stand, they realized that it was a lot of other people were in the same situation. And I haven't so far heard anybody being angry or upset. They're just saying, well, we're all part of this big thing.
A few minutes ago, I was watching the President and Mrs. Obama walking down Pennsylvania Avenue, waving at people, a sight that we don't normally see in the security-ridden Washington.
Well, we certainly have never seen it since 9/11, so this is the first time a president has gotten out of the car and done that in post-9/11 era.
So let's talk about politics. What can the nation expect the House of Representatives to be doing in the next 100 days?
Well, the excitement about all of us who have the privilege of serving in government and certainly in the House of Representatives, the People's House, and the discussions between us isn't this marvelous, this sort of a renaissance of people getting interested in government again, of participating. And what we all know is that we can't govern unless people will follow, and people won't follow unless they give a damn. And what you've seen is this country, I think, essentially have a rebirth. I think this fascination with governance has been suppressed because our government has been suppressing the people and being so secretive and not doing things that people are proud of. And with the election of Barack Obama, I think people think those that era is over, and they're wanting to reconnect. And people who've never connected before are now interested in the value of connecting. And so those of us that are trying to make the laws, remember the president can't govern without the consent of Congress. Essentially, we are the board of directors of the White House, and he has to propose and we have to dispose. But the interest in doing things, of getting stuff done, is really high. I've never seen anything like it in my lifetime.
I remember about 6 years ago, we were visiting in your apartment next to the Capitol, and you were talking about how depressing it was at that time with the Republican control of the Senate and the House of Representatives. And that was 180 degrees from where we are now.
Exactly. I think we had dark clouds that had assembled over Washington, and it was just you didn't get up in the morning feeling that any of your ideas or excitement or reason you wanted to get government and get involved to try to solve problems was going to have any reception whatsoever. We were in the minority party, the Democrats, and you just felt like you were a flower pot. You had to be here to be the opposition. Well, I didn't come here just to complain about my president and administration and the leadership in Congress. I came here to get things done, but found that nobody cared. And that era is over. Those days are gone.
About 40 years ago, when you and I first met, we had just returned from being in the Peace Corps, you in Colombia, me in Peru, and we talked about getting involved in government, and now here you are. You've seen the changes in that time, but share what you've seen with our listeners.
Well, you and I think, got motivated to go in the Peace Corps because John F. Kennedy really, we were in college, and he made that proposal of asking not what the country can do for you, but what you could do. And I think that kind of struck, and we were in the mood of what can we do? And there was a civil rights movement was being born, and you could either go to the South and register voters. At the same time, Peace Corps was proposed, and I knew immediately that I had worked in summer jobs overseas, and I was just curious to try to explore the world and to really deal with the root causes of poverty. So that calling of our government and our president, that's real leadership to set motion an initiative that people could respond to. And I expect a lot of that out of Barack. As far as the Peace Corps is concerned, today on a podium, because I'm really trying to double the size of Peace Corps. Peace Corps is $350 million. That's less than one fighter aircraft. And we have 5,000 volunteers and about 60 different countries around the world. There are 10, 20, 30 countries that want us, but Congress hasn't appropriated the money. So the push here, and I always ask Barack, is if you want me to support you, you got to promise me you'll double the Peace Corps. And he said, I'll do that. So I've just been bugging him ever since. And in this stimulus package, they came out money with some money for the AmeriCorps, and they came out with money for Job Corps, but they didn't put any money for Peace Corps. And I reminded him very strongly, look, they said, those aren't jobs. I said, yes, they are. They're American jobs. Their jobs are created in America, just that the office is overseas. But the thing today on the podium, Vice President Biden came to me and said, you've got to, congratulations, Vice President, you've got to double the size of the Peace Corps. He says, I've been trying to call you, and I'll call you next week. And First Lady Hillary Clinton, former First Lady, now Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, said, you've got to double the size of the Peace Corps. And when Rahm Emanuel came down, I told Rahm, Chief of Staff of the President, a friend, and said, you've got to double the size of the Peace Corps. So I let the message know on the podium today that I'm going to make the President-elect, President of the United States, Obama, know that we're not going to let him down on his campaign promise to double the size of the Peace Corps.
What sort of direct contact, do you have with the president?
Well, individuals don't have just a lot of, can't just call up the president. Some can. If you were a Kennedy, certainly that's going to get through. But not us rank and file in the House. But he will come to the Democratic caucus that we'll have in 2 weeks, where we have a retreat with all the members of the House. And he will show up there, and there'll be a lot of, it's all off the record and give and take and pretty casual, and nobody's in coat and tie, and we go away for a retreat in a resort, and we, there's just, it's a lot of informality, and there's a lot of opportunity to do some discussion. He'll deliver a speech, and he'll answer a lot of questions. So we will have some direct contact at that moment.
And obviously, the Democratic caucus meets annually, and in the past several years, the president did not come. So it's a big difference this time.
Now, President Bush came to our first one, which was really interesting because he was a deer in the headlights. He was right after Clinton loved it, and he loved the challenges. Usually we get presidents to come. But I think what's unique about Barack is he comes from Congress. You know, he's a member of the Senate, and neither Bush nor Clinton were. They were new to Washington when they got sworn into office. Barack has been here and has lived with us and been one of our colleagues, and a lot of his cabinet are our colleagues. I think he made very wise appointments, and although there were some of my friends and said, where are all the new faces? He promised a new, fresh government. I said, he'll bring some new ideas, but he's hired the best carpenters to get the job done, because it does take getting it through Congress, and you need to have the faces of people who know how to get things. I think he's done a better job of hiring a cabinet and hiring staff that really want to get the job done rather than just hiring people with good resumes.
In terms of public works projects, where we can hopefully rebuild bridges, rebuild or update the tunnel near Baltimore so that the high-speed train on the East Coast doesn't have to slow down to 30 miles an hour to get through a leaky tunnel. What sort of things do you see that would affect California?
Well, I think we're going to see billions and billions of dollars come into California within a month. And because the president will sign the stimulus package that we are going to be marking up this week and debating in the next 2 weeks and hopefully get to his desk within a month, if not sooner. And that is $850 billion of expenditures. $350 more than I ever wanted, but it's what the White House wants, are in tax cuts and tax credits. They're to the middle class, and tax credits that will allow investment in alternative energy issues and kind of stimulate investment in the things that we want that are green technology. Of the $500 billion in expenditures, a lot of that will be safety net for those who have lost their jobs and have been out of work for some time. We will continue the unemployment insurance. There are people who are in the private sector who lose their insurance when they lose their jobs. They can get what they call COBRA insurance, which is a bridge for a while, but then those COBRA provisions run out, so we're going to extend those for people so they can have medical insurance. So those are what we call the safety net programs, and we'll take care of those. Those are a lot of them run by the states, and we'll give them money to do that. But the last bit of that $500 billion will go to public works projects, what we call Shovel Ready, and we'll go right to local regional transportation systems and to schools, both K-12 and higher education, to really try to get buildings built and roads and alternative forms of transportation, guideways, levees and ports and all those things built. We want to get people, blue-collar people, back to work, and we get them back to work, they'll spend their money, and the economy ought to take a bounce. Now, this is all a big gamble because no one knows if that's enough money. A lot of us in Congress have urged that we spend a lot more, but the Obama White House has indicated this is as high as they want to go. They also have $350 billion left over from the Wall Street sort of rescue to decide how to spend that, too.
Well, Congressman Sam Farr, I want to take a break and then ask you about the green technology and what we can anticipate. But I do want to say that in this edition of Radio Curious, we're talking with Congressman Sam Farr, who represents Santa Cruz and Monterey counties in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C., on today, the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated as President of the United States. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Sam, talk about the green technology.
Well, the president is very excited about green technology. California is exceedingly excited about it, and even so that the private sector in California is way ahead of the government by putting private dollars and venture capital dollars into green technology. I think my county, Monterey County, has the first licensed biodiesel production plant in the state, and it's oversubscribed already. And I think that you'll see as a state, because California has taken such aggressive action in the what I call the delivery mode, that's in the building codes and the zoning and the things that really relate to development and construction at the local level, we're way ahead of the rest of the states. And I think California's betting that if we get this down, get it good, and can do it comprehensively from water systems to sewer systems to roofing and windows and essentially green infrastructure, that we will have a technology to market not only to the rest of the states, but to the rest of the world.
And how about solar? Since it hasn't rained here in way too long, can we make use of our sunny skies?
Definitely. And the legislature is really, state legislature and the governor, to his credit, has really put a lot of emphasis on that. And what you're seeing is that rather than just have solar plates everywhere, which get into neighborhood aesthetics and things, people don't just like those ugly plates, even though we all love solar energy, that we are developing composite material so that the roofing material will have the solar voltaic cells built into the material. And you won't have to build it ugly anymore. You build a regular-looking house, and it can be all solarized. So I'm very excited that we are going to be the first state in the union to really bust through a lot of these issues. We've already done it in a lot of ways, and I think we never take credit for what California did with its own building. You were involved in that way back home when you sort of got into allowing people to build handmade houses.
Houses in the woods when the local building department told people to vacate and demolish in 30 days, one of the most absurd things I've heard.
Yeah, they were green tag or red tagging all those houses. They were beautifully built, and now we're urging people to build them that way.
I think
California, the interesting thing is during the energy crisis, the Congress members from other states were kind of laughing at California and saying, you've got all these huge energy crisis and costs and your systems of failure because you're all these yuppies that live out there in that wonderful state driving around your SUVs and drinking your Merlot while you're taking your hot tubs. No wonder you have such energy problems. Now they come up to us on the floor and they say, is it really true that California has the lowest per capita energy use in the United States? How did you do that? And, the answer is, well, it's taken us a long time, and we've done it in everywhere, from water conservation to, more efficient engines, more efficient houses. We've done it in thousands of different ways. That's how we got to it. So I think that's where, with Obama in the White House and putting investment incentives and jobs that are going to have some permanent, he doesn't want to just have a job to keep a job. He wants the job to be one that will be a growing job, that there'll be, for every job now, there'll be two tomorrow or three tomorrow. And he wants the product of those jobs to be everlasting so that we really have, we look back on this era of reinvestment and think we really jump-started the United States into a new era in the world.
Let's talk about health insurance. What changes do you see coming to us so that everybody has access to health care?
Well, we know how to do it. We just can't afford to do it. If you just sort of extended Medicare, which is a comprehensive single-payer program, to the rest of the world, which is a simple way to do it, we would bust the federal bank. So we have to make some savings as we extend the coverage, and I think we're going to really have to make savings out of third parties, out of the insurance companies. We just can't afford to have them make so much obscene profit and stand between the doctor and the patient. So there's a lot of proposals back here. Well, it's very complicated because, one of the problems we have, particularly in rural areas in California on the coastline where the cost of living is so high, is that doctors coming out of medical school now, going into family practices, say, which is an essential entry-level essential medical practice, they've got about $240,000 in student loans that they have to pay back. They're now having to rent a space for an office, and they're going to have to pay overhead, and and they want to buy a house in these expensive coastal communities, and it's just cost prohibitive. And you're seeing what happens is doctors are going into medical school for all the right kind of public social benefits, but as they get near their residency program, they realize that what they had their heart on doing, they can't afford, and they're moving into the high-paying jobs like plastic surgery and those things. Well, that's not good public policy. So, you know, one of the things we could do is pick up the cost of medical education for people that are going to go into the needed specialties and extend this coverage to everyone. This first bill that Barack will sign will cover the children of America. The first two bills he'll sign will cover women in the workplace and children in the health care field. And I think it's quite a symbol that we've moved a giant steps forward for women and children.
Both of those bills were previously vetoed by George Bush.
And both of them have passed the House and are just waiting to pass the Senate and receive a Barack signature.
Let's shift topics here for a minute and talk about the director of the CIA, Leon Panetta, who was the chief of staff for President Clinton, and when he took that position, you were elected to his place in Congress from Santa Cruz and Monterey. Tell us about Mr. Panetta.
Well, Leon, I believe, will be the most effective director of the CIA we've ever had because, one, he's a dedicated public servant. He believes that that you have to have strong civilian checks and balances of government, including the intelligence field. He is also a fiscal conservative and likes strong management. He was head of the OPR before he went to be chief of staff for President Clinton.
OPR is?
The Office of Management and Budget, OMB, excuse me, which is the sort of Department of Finance for the federal government. It's the White House Department of Finance, OMB, Office of Management and Budget. He later, after he left to Washington, was selected to be on the Iraq Study Group. He has overseas experience. Obviously, when he was Chief of Staff to President of the United States, he sat in on every daily briefing of the President. He knows what the President needs from in terms of intelligence. And I think what he'll do is he'll bring a lot more sort of the kind of transparency that is needed and the assurances to those of us on the outside that the agency is running according to law.
So for people to become involved in the issues that we've talked about in this edition of Radio Curious or in other issues of their concern, what would you suggest?
Well, they already did it by getting registered to vote and going down and voting. That was the first act of democracy, is to the people select the government. And now, as I said to the chief of staff of Barack, to his campaign staff member on the podium today, I said, well, today's school begins. This is the first day of all these years of campaigning that it really makes a difference, is that we're in charge now, and now we've got to do something. Well, the people have to stay involved. They can't just go to the polls and vote and say, I did it, and I'll see you in 4 years. They're the ones that have to be the checks and balances. If they don't like what the president's proposing or a member of Congress or so on, they've got to let them know. And if they do like it, they've also got them to know. I mean, I think that what I've observed is without the people involvement, you can work behind their backs because there's no accountability for. I watched the California Republicans during the energy crisis vote against the state of California, against business interests in their state, against the interests of their own contributors who were in the business world, because they didn't want Gray Davis, a Democratic governor, to get any credit for it. And yet nobody ever called them on it. Nobody ever said, hey, you can't continue to vote that way. So the checks and balances for whether the Obama administration and the United States Congress is doing the job that people thought that they should be doing when they went to the polls and elected us, the people have got to let us know, stay involved. And the one way to do it is through programs like yours, because you know how to ask the right questions.
Well, thank you. And before we conclude, let me ask two questions. One of them, you know, that's the book question. The other is, can you share with us an important idea or concept that you've learned recently?
Well, I think this whole concept of participatory government has new meanings, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it's played out. It is so essential in a democracy that the people participate, and they have, you know, you always assume that they know the agenda of the school board, of the city council, the board of supervisors, of the state legislature, of the United States Congress, and of all the leadership, and essentially that's what the transparency is. We tell you ahead of time what we're going to do. We have an agenda. We have open public debates. You watch it all. But, you know, people heretofore haven't stayed very well tuned. They've switched over to a lot of the other channels. But I think participatory government's going to rely a lot more on
us participating.
The C-SPANs of the world and the radio curiouses of the world.
Well, Sam, finally, can you tell us about an interesting book you've read lately?
Well, interesting. No, I'm always reading esoteric books about my district, and one of them is about this character named Jaime Dangulo, who lived in Big Sur forever, and there's a biography by his daughter that is incredible. He was just a very interesting character who lived in Big Sur and studied all the Indians in your area and actually taught at the University of California. But had the most strange life for anybody of that era of anybody I've ever read about.
Well, Congressman Sam Farr, thanks for being with us once again on Radio Curious.
You're very welcome. It's always a pleasure.
Sam Farr represents Monterey County and Santa Cruz County in the United States House of Representatives. The book that he recommends is Indian Tales, A California Legacy by Jaime Dangulo. That's JAIMEDANGULO. This interview with Congressman Sam Farr was recorded from his apartment in Washington, D.C. on January 20th, 2009. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. There are over 750 archives on our website, radiocurious.org, and I'm honored to tell you that Radio Curious is now part of the collection at the Library of Congress. We appreciate your cards, ideas, and letters, and do enjoy hearing from you. The email is curious@radiocurious.org. The postal address is 700 West Smith Street, Ukiah, California, 95482. The phone is 707-621-5075. Ignacio Ayala is the assistant producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.